Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So here is what my sources tell me I missed while I was gone last week. At the Republican debate, Newt Gingrich described himself in one word this way.
Cheerful.
And then 30 seconds later said this.
I think this is a very sober period, and I believe this is the most dangerous president on national security grounds in American history.
So that's one thing. Jeremy Lin proved himself mortal as the media continued to prove itself incapable of resisting puns in headlines. New Jersey and Maryland moved one step closer to legalizing gay marriage. And we all said the phrase, well, everybody but me because I was off, transvaginal ultrasound, way more than we ever expected to in our media lives. On second thought, maybe it was good that I missed the whole controversy over the Virginia abortion law. But now I'm back and ready to talk politics with Ben Smith of BuzzFeed. In the 30 seconds it took me to read that list, Ben and his team probably broke five stories and put out three viral videos. Ben, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me. Welcome back to New York.
And also thanks for filling in for me last week on It's Free Country, the podcast. That was fun hearing you with Todd and Anna.
It was a pleasure.
And we'll see who won the voting on Wednesday as to who brought the most revealing soundbite of the week. You were bottom feeding, I will say that.
I was trolling with the transvaginal ultrasound and that remix.
Might even be incentive for some of the listeners to go to It's Free Country and listen to the podcast. So let's talk about the two primaries coming up tomorrow. Obviously, Michigan and Arizona. At this point, Romney leads Arizona by somewhere around 17 percentage points. And Michigan seems to be very, very close. Is one more important than the other?
Michigan is more important because Mitt Romney grew up there and has always viewed it as sort of a home state. He won it against John McCain in 2008, even as he was losing that race. On the other hand, you know, that sounds very simple. In fact, it's kind of complicated. But, you know, the base in Michigan, as everywhere, is very conservative. And Romney won it not because he was the hometown favorite, but because he was the conservative alternative to John McCain that year. He's now, you know, now he's got a conservative alternative, and the polarities have switched up a little bit.
In fact, Santorum had endorsed Romney in 2008 as the conservative alternative
right.
to John McCain, which complicates Santorum's life a little bit. But I want to tell you what I've been thinking about Michigan, and I may be a minority of one here, but I think the political media are hyperventilating way too much about the meaning of Michigan. Just because Romney came from there and with his political history there, with his opposition to the auto bailout and Romney's Michigan base being around Detroit, it's got some unique politics, in my opinion. It's not some defining national bellwether. And yet people keep making it sound like if he loses Michigan, the party is going to freak out and look for new candidates because it would show how hard it would be for him to beat Obama. How much do you buy that conventional wisdom?
Well, I mean, none of these. There's no primary that's an absolute national bellwether. And it's while it's true that, you know, that Michigan's his opposition to the auto bailout is a problem in Michigan, conservative Republicans in Michigan are not the people who supported the bailout there necessarily. They hate the United Auto Workers Union, the people voting in this primary. So, you know, each of these things is mostly a bellwether for how the conservative base of the Republican Party is feeling, and that can be projected forward into future primaries. And it is, I mean, he has all these advantages, including that Santorum isn't even on the ballot in every state. I mean, Romney really ought to just mathematically get this thing done, but I mean it does involve winning some states, and so
right. But how about this scenario? And again, what I'm really reacting to is that I saw on Sunday talk show after Sunday talk show yesterday, and feel like I've been hearing this for days. This idea that party leaders, whoever they are going to step in and try to force a brokered convention if Romney loses Michigan because it's going to show how weak he is. But how about this scenario, which is highly possible? Arizona and Michigan both vote tomorrow. They each have about 30 delegates. Santorum wins the Michigan popular vote by 2 points, and they split the delegates about evenly. Romney wins Arizona by 17 points, which is the current lead, and he takes all the delegates because that's a winner-take-all state. In other words, you end Tuesday night with an even split in Michigan, a Romney landslide in Arizona. Romney takes home three-quarters of the delegates. And even under that scenario, the party is going to freak out about Romney's weakness?
Well, I think that what you just said is really the point. Who's the party? Who are these leaders who are going to shove somebody aside? I mean, they've been talking about this for a year. It's not going to happen. There's nobody with the muscle to do it. And then it's just sort of very hard to see at this brokered convention, like, how does this work? Who is it who walks into Mitch Daniels' suite where he's kind of sitting, you know, enjoying the show and says, all right, like, now's the time. You're totally unprepared. You have no money, but you need to, you know, you have no national name recognition, but now's the time to, like, feed yourself into the meat grinder of the Obama campaign for 2 months. And how would they convince him to do it if they haven't already? Like, this gets harder and harder for those guys to get in every day, not easier.
And all along, of course, we've talked about Mitt Romney's image as wealthy and out of touch. And yesterday we got another example. I saw you tweeting about it at a NASCAR race in Florida. Romney was asked if he follows NASCAR. What exactly happened there?
Well, he doesn't really follow it himself, but some of his friends own teams.
That's what he said.
That's what he said. I mean, you know, it's just like nobody makes him say these things. It's and although they would if they could, his enemies would.
And this was before that particular gaffe, but Romney was asked about his problem connecting with voters on Fox News Sunday, and here was his response.
If people think there's something wrong with being successful in America, then they better vote for the other guy, because I've been extraordinarily successful, and I want to use that success and that know-how to help the American people. And by the way, in terms of connecting with the American people, you know, when I got into this race, there were a lot of guys in the race. Other people have come and gone. I've got more votes than anybody else in this race so far. I've been the guy that's been able to connect in New Hampshire and in Florida and in Nevada. And I think we're on track to do pretty well here in Michigan and in Arizona.
And again, you know, that's a pretty boilerplate answer. But it's one that he had trouble getting out earlier in the race. And if you remember, there was a series of debates early on where he sounded kind of defensive about his wealth, and he was making some of the gaffes that we were just referring to, like the $10,000 bet with Rick Perry, et cetera, et cetera. And then he came out swinging in one of those debates. And he says, you know, I'm proud of my success. This is what America is about, people who are successful. I'm not going to apologize for my success. I want to help more people be successful. And everybody was going, oh, yay, Mitt is finally standing up for success. Now he looks strong. So I don't know. Where is he now?
I mean, that is a good answer to me. I think that's a good answer that people totally buy. Like, don't. But he has a personally complicated relationship with his success that keeps coming through. I mean, it's partly, you know, his father was very, very wealthy, but his father then did not give him a huge pile of money. He's not rich because he's an heir. He's rich because he made his own money. But nobody believes that, and he insists on it. It's very important to him that people know that. It's somehow a very complicated thing.
Ben Smith from BuzzFeed, my guest on WNYC, as we talk about the political race for president. And then there's the Rick Santorum clip from the weekend. And this one completely blows my mind. And I even heard Bob Schieffer hosting Meet the Press yesterday, who's, you know, a pretty contained guy when it comes to expressing his opinions. He said that he didn't understand what Rick Santorum was trying to get at this. Of course, he's trying to provide a populist message. He talks about manufacturing. He talks about Pennsylvania steel country. And then he says things like this, talking to voters in Michigan on Saturday.
President Obama once said he wants everybody in America to go to college. What a snob. They're good, decent men and women who go out and work hard every day and put their skills to test that aren't taught by some liberal college professor and trying to indoctrinate them. Oh, I understand why he wants you to go to college. He wants to remake you in his image. I want to create jobs so people can remake their children into their image, not his.
And for the record, Rick Santorum, Bachelor of Arts, 1980, with honors in political science from Penn State University, MBA, 1981, University of Pittsburgh, 1986, JD with honors from the Dickinson School of Law, just for the record. What was he trying to do there?
I mean, I sort of want to defend him here. He keeps doing this. He comes across as nasty and negative, even though this was pretty good policy. I think there is a wide consensus that in America, that, you know, we spend way too much money on sort of cookie cutter higher education when there are kinds of community college and vocational education that, you know, that make a lot of sense. In fact, Barack Obama gave his big education speech not at a liberal arts college, but at a community college.
But he didn't say community college. He said Barack Obama once said he wants everybody in America to go to college. What a snob. He didn't make a distinction between community college or
Harvard. No, that's right. But I think the policy he was getting at was that America should there should be good jobs in America for people without college degrees. This is totally uncontroversial. But he can't manage to say it without attacking every single person who ever went to college, including apparently himself. And this is sort of Rick Santorum's broader problem, that he has these intense ideological views that project through whatever basically, you know, normal policy prescription
he's
offering.
But there's a real policy issue problem, I think, with that as well, which is that we have a bipartisan policy in this country at this moment of exporting low-skill jobs and saying that our future is going to be as the country that provides high-skill jobs, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's a Democratic and Republican bipartisan free trade-ish policy right now, exporting low-skill jobs and claiming that our future is going to be based on the high-skill jobs, which means that it almost – is required for it to be national policy to get more and more and more and more Americans to go to college, doesn't it?
Well, I think, you know, I think that it's not outrageous to think that there's a limit to that, that it's not 100% of the population who are going to be software engineers, and that there need to be good jobs for people who are not going that road. And Santorum he's in a minority and thinking that manufacturing ought to be nurtured, ought to come back, ought to be a big part of the American economy. That's a popular view, though. That's not a wildly outside the mainstream view to encourage manufacturing as
they,
well.
They
as,
all say that. Obama says that. Romney
right,
says
but
that.
Santorum would be more aggressive about it. He'd slash business taxes to encourage it.
And he's gotten some flack from the right, actually, hasn't he, for trying to single out manufacturing for special tax breaks in his economic plan. And because the pure free market, you know, I'm guessing the Larry Kudlow types and people like that will say, no, you don't single out a sector. You just cut taxes across the board and let the market provide.
Oh, absolutely. And Santorum has never been a free market fundamentalist. He's never been a kind of modern conservative free market guy. He opposed NAFTA for this same reason, because he was concerned about what it would do to the American manufacturing sector. His tax planning does pick winners and losers, not only manufacturers but also people with lots of kids. It's a tax plan that's trying to do a bit of social and economic engineering. And that is very different from where Mitt Romney is and from where a lot of the conservative movement is.
Right. And he wants to drop the business tax on manufacturing,
right.
The corporate income tax on manufacturers to zero.
To zero. Yeah.
Zero, which is a lot less than the Mitt Romney tax plan, which, believe it or not, somewhere within the gaffes about NASCAR and criticism of college education, there was some actual policy in the last few days, and Romney released a new version of his tax plan. Gone is the 57-step extravaganza that he had been talking about earlier, and in comes a much simpler version, a permanent 20% cut to all income tax rates. Repeal the estate tax and the alternative minimum tax. And another feature in the plan is closing deductions for the top 1% of earners. Interesting choice of number, and here's what Rick Santorum had to say about that.
The top 1%. Where have I heard that before? We have a Republican running for president who's campaigning as an Occupy Wall Street adherent.
Maybe Romney should have just picked the top 1.5% or 1.2%, anything but saying the top 1%. What is he actually proposing for the top 1%?
He's proposing something, actually, a version of something Obama proposed, which is ending the deduction on charitable giving by the very, very rich, a lot of which goes to personal foundations, a lot of which is seen as basically a kind of form of tax planning.
And other elements of the plan, he'll cut the corporate tax rate to 25%. No surprise there, it's 35%. Everybody's talking about cutting it, including Obama, right? And families with an annual income below $200,000 will pay no taxes on income from capital gains or interest or qualified dividends. Is that a meaningful proposal? How much capital gains tax is there on families earning less than $200,000 per year now?
I mean, I don't think it's not going to be a massive win for most of those people, particularly people at the lower end of that scale. I mean, I think the people up toward 200 are probably going to be reaping more of it. But I think and a lot of Romney's plan is structured to look across the board, but in fact, just because, you know, 20% of 20 million is a lot more than 20% of 100,000, you know, the the money goes toward the top of the scale there.
Let me take a caller who wants to support Santorum on the college education statement.
I needed that, some help
there. Danny in Massapequa, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling in today, Danny.
Hey, good to hear from you. I love your show. I often disagree with your position, but I always think you present it in a fair and good manner, and I appreciate that.
Thank you,
but
sir.
As far as the capital gains, my father's a retiree, and he doesn't make anywhere near $200,000, but they live on dividends and capital gains after a lifetime of investing. So even though their net annual income is not that great, they that's an important part of their income, and they're down in Florida, and all these people go out to dinner, and they spend a lot of money. So that's a very good plan as well. As far as Mr. Santorum's statement about college, now I don't plan on voting for Mr. Santorum, but as the father of four teenagers, and one actually, two are no longer a teenager, one just graduated, one just turned 20, I agree with that in a way that this country, and in certain, they're pushing every kid to go to college like you have to do it, where nobody seems to want to become a plumber or a carpenter anymore. These are honorable, well-paying positions if you do it right, and it seems like everybody I know's kid is up in SUNY school becoming a teacher, and there just aren't these jobs, don't exist anymore, and the colleges are producing people and cost so much money for jobs that don't exist. And I read an article where they said if you're going to spend $150,000 to send your child to school, which is not even an exorbitant amount to some of these schools, you would be better off on their 18th birthday taking them to McDonald's, putting the $150,000 in a mutual fund, and within 10 years they'll own the McDonald's and they'll have $1 million in the mutual fund. People spend so much money on a college education that doesn't translate into a skill. So I agree with him partially with that too many people go to college with really no idea what they're going to do with their life.
I think that's true. I'm not sure that that's what Rick Santorum was getting at, Danny, but I think that you raise something that we've talked about on the show a fair amount, actually, and that is a big, big issue. If people go to college, if college is going to be so expensive, and even Obama is talking about trying to put downward pressure on the cost of going to college.
Well, Obama, that's where you had a show last week where you were asking people if they get any kind of government aid. And because I have two people in college now, both of my children qualify for a Pell Grant.
Right.
But for me, I take it, and even though I don't agree with it, because if they eliminated all these grants, these higher educationals would have to lower their costs because their business is like something else. So that Pell Grant just goes to subsidize a professor who's getting paid a buck and a half to teach 6 hours a week, So, the whole public education, higher education, has become a money-making organization for the people at the top. They make tremendous amounts of money for doing very little, in my opinion.
How torn are you as a dad between, gosh, and you've said what you do for a living on this show before when you've called in, so I don't know if you want to say it again.
It's not a state secret.
So you're a police officer, right?
Correct. I was a lieutenant in the New York City Police Department.
And so do you feel torn between, I really want my kids to be able to go to college and do something more professional, quote unquote, than I did. Not that there's any dishonor in being a cop, obviously. But on the one hand, I really want my kids to be able to go to college and, get to another level of income or whatever. And on the other hand, maybe they are talking to your kids and saying, you really could become a plumber and make a good money and an honorable living at that.
Well, to quote one of my favorite TV characters of all time, Hawkeye Pierce, I screwed up in reverse because I was such a good father to my kids and was always coaching teams that they look at the lifestyle that I provided them and my wife worked and I worked, and I say, hey, there's nothing wrong with being a police lieutenant like that, which is not. I would love my son to become a doctor, but unfortunately he's had a positive role model for the past 20 years, and this is what he's already passed the test, and he doesn't want to be a police officer. He wants to be the chief, which is always good, no matter what field you're going into, you don't want to, you still don't want to stay at the lower rung. So I have other kids in the neighborhood that don't seem to have, at least he knows what he wants to do. My oldest son graduated with a degree in a medical field, and I'm pushing him to go back to continue, and he could become a physician's assistant or something. But I got news for you. Those jobs don't even pay as much as you think that they would. I mean, they're not, those fields are also being cut now by a lot of uncertainty because of the ongoing healthcare war.
Danny, thanks a lot for calling, and keep raising your voice, all right?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we could take call. Now, suddenly, we have, 10 calls on this Santorum college statement and no more time. But what were you going to say?
I was going to say, Santorum was getting at something real, as Danny is saying there, although he probably could have done it without attacking people who go to college.
So I think we're going to have to do a follow-up on this later in the week and get a lot more opinions from a lot more callers on what he really meant. For example, here I'll just read one more from the comments page. Sophie writes, his point was entirely about indoctrination. College teaches your children to think differently, and that is wrong because your children should only think what you want them to think. It's about blatant authoritarianism, not the value of manual labor. So that's a whole other take.
He's coming from a lot of different places, and it all kind of seeps in there.
So, all right. Well, let's see. Before you go, one of my producers heard you at a panel last week, my guest Ben Smith from BuzzFeed, in which you said, maybe jokingly, that you don't think you really need a website anymore, that most of the information you disseminate is through social media, Twitter, Facebook, et cetera. So is that the BuzzFeed approach? The website doesn't matter. It's all about the bits of news and the distribution?
You know, we love our website, BuzzFeed.com. Please visit. But we also realize that people are increasingly getting their news through Twitter, through Facebook, through other social services, and so the pieces of information, your stories, have to really survive and thrive on their own in that world. They have to be good. You can't just expect people to read them because you're jamming them in their faces.
And people may think of BuzzFeed as mostly about breaking news and quick information, but you managed to commit an act of actual long-form journalism last week. Turns out Florida Senator Marco Rubio, who people have rumored as a likely vice presidential candidate if Romney is a nominee, grew up Mormon and then renounced it and became a Catholic.
Yeah, which is, you know, sort of a interesting but meaningless bit of trivia, except in the very unlikely case that there's a Republican nominee for president who's a Mormon, in which case maybe it's something that actually, you know, prevents him from being Veep.
Give any credence to the Ron Paul going after Santorum to support Romney conspiracy theory that's making
God,
the rounds?
Oh, God, yes. There's clearly something going
on
there.
It even got mentioned on NPR that the alleged deal would be for Rand Paul, his son, senator from Kentucky, to be the vice presidential nominee.
Or maybe to be mentioned as a possible nominee or something. My colleague Rosie Gray talked to them last week, and they said, well, you know, there's no deal, but if there were a deal, we'd do it with Romney. He seems like such a nice man. So I don't know.
Romney Paul. I don't know. I'm trying to envision it on the bumper stickers compared to Romney Christie, say.
Oh, Rand Paul couldn't work for anyone, but you could imagine them pretending that he was being considered.
Ben Smith from BuzzFeed, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we will take calls primarily from parents of New York City public school children. If you have looked at the ratings for your kids' teachers that came out late last week, stay with us.